Yes, hello, you are listening to Wild Time with myself, Thomas Janak. Wild Time is the animal rights / world conservation show. Regular listeners probably notice that usually I say it's the animal welfare / world conservation show, but it has shifted, actually. It's more like an animal rights show these days. And the sound that you heard in the background was very likely the daughter of my next guest. I'm actually joined on the phone by Stephen Thompson, who is a teacher who lives and works and does everything he does in Osaka, Japan. Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Hey, Thomas. Hello. And wonderful listeners here at your radio show. I'm very, very happy to join you today.
That's brilliant. I saw you yesterday for the first time via Skype. I think technology is just a brilliant thing, isn't it?
Agreed. It really empowers what I do.
Yeah, because I only I'm sort of doing a radio show, or my radio show as well, on an internet radio station in the States, and it's easier if I just get a camera and they all click on it, so I don't need a mic. I just use the mic that the camera has, you know, and they can all see me and stuff, you know. I probably just put a picture up of my parrot or something to go easy on them. So technology has come a long way. And speaking of technology, I also sort of found you via Facebook, people talking about activism and stuff. And before we started recording, I was just touching on this, that, you know, a lot of people have a very limited idea about Japan. You know, we have these slogans. There's a car manufacturer, and he has a new car, and it says German quality, Japanese reliability, and French flair. So we put people in niches. That's what we do as a species. It's easier, I think, for people to say, okay, what exactly is it you're doing? But you in Osaka there, and I know you're a teacher, and I also know that you bring your students sometimes to animal shelters and stuff. But before we talk about what you do, and also talking about the situation in Taiji, is how did you end up in Japan?
I finished graduate school in education and couldn't find a job in China.
Lucky you.
And I came here. I was treated really, really well and really enjoyed my career choice, which was teaching English. And then I found my wife and things, and really good friends, and really have set down roots. My daughter was born about a year and a half ago.
Okay, and she will definitely grow up bilingual then.
Yeah, she understands both languages. She's just a year and, 7 months now, but she understands both languages.
Yeah, that's the thing with kids, isn't it? They just get it all. You know, it's just when you get older, all of a sudden you say, like, oh, how is he, you know, how do they still build the sentences? We think too much about things, you know. There's a Japanese guy that actually says, you know, once you, I think, 12 years old, your vocal cords are set, which means you can make up by having a good ear, but you probably will always have an accent.
Right.
So I don't know if there's any truth to that. I use it as an excuse anyway.
Yeah, if we grow up speaking languages, I would like people to grow up being very, very aware of animals. I think that the more awareness you have of different things growing up, the more it affects you in your life. We don't grow up with enough awareness of animals or awareness of issues on the planet. I mean, issues on the planet to really work hard at it when we're adults. And this is what we're facing now, serious issues in the world.
Yeah, it's also, you know, I think just what you just said there, education is the key. It has to start young, because a lot of people just they never even see or understand what you're saying. I mean, from my point of view, being an animal psychologist, I understand that we're very well just a part of the web of life. It's not our planet. Per se, and I spend a lot of time with animals, and I always say to people, language is overrated. They have their own set of communication skills, and we get on about, like, oh yeah, where are you from? What are you doing? You know, we put people in niches. So did you grow up with animals then?
Oh, did I grow up with animals? I just grew up with a dog, and in my adult life, I had many cats. And now in Japan, it's very difficult to keep pets because of space. Small pets are easy.
Yeah.
Larger pets aren't. It's tough to keep animals in Japan. So, no, I don't now, but I really, dogs and cats are wonderful. I was introduced to dolphins about age 20, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And you fall in love with dolphins, but you don't realize that when we see dolphins in an aquarium or we get to swim with them, that may not be the best thing for the dolphin either. But so yeah, dogs and cats and dolphins in that order.
Yeah, it's just, you know, also interesting, you know, that it's the same with the zoo. You know, some people say, look, the zoo is just a collection of animals, and other people say, like, you know, I don't get to see them anywhere else, so I have to go to the zoo. And the first, rather than saying, like, you know, is it good for an animal to be there?
Right.
You know, but I think that's what we essentially do. Unfortunately, we use things a lot without really thinking it through and giving respect to something that a lot of people see as inferior doesn't help either.
I was really moved by, I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan in the States, and I was really moved by something that the Detroit Zoo did back, gosh, I'm not quite sure. Audience members, you're going to have to look that up, but the Detroit Zoo won a Genesis Award given by the Humane Society in America for closing down their incredibly well-run, large-space elephant exhibits, elephant zoo. They realized that no matter how big it was, it just could not
substitute
for a real situation, and they shipped their animals to a non-zoo environment. And I believe the same thing about dogs and cats. It's cruel to keep large dogs in most places in Japan. Small dogs, they need parks. Cats as well, but dolphins. Keeping dolphins in aquariums like they do in Taiji, really really small tiny places. Very cruel.
Yeah, but this is not the main issue about Taiji really, because there's a lot of there's also a lot of killing involved. And a lot of people only know the peripherals of it, because the issue that you have is that you say, like, you know, a lot of there are dolphins being killed, and some people say, like, oh, how can you do this to these intelligent animals? Then the Japanese turn around and say, like, you know, feck it, you know, because you kill chicken, you know, intelligent or not,
chickens and cows, yeah,
you know. So unless you really understand that there is no need to consume any animal, so it becomes a different topic. It becomes a topic about veganism and sustainability, as well as highlighting the plight. What I reckon is, if they would kill sharks there, you would have less people worried about it. Because of the stigma that we have, you know, I mean, you can't do a horror movie about dolphins.
Right. Yeah, you try that. Think about that.
Yeah. We're still really, young. We should probably get together to do some sort of a film and see if we can pull it off or something.
It'd be a parody. It would be the dolphins fight back. And,
yeah, something like that.
And go after the Taiji dolphin hunters. They start to disappear at night.
Yeah. And speaking of which, I mean, apparently, before we talk about what's going on there, I just wanted to mention it that there is an international community now that has taken notice of the things that are going on in Taiji. There's a city called Broome in Australia who was the sister city or twin city, whatever they call it, with Taiji, and they have severed and they have severed the links to Taiji because of the atrocity.
No. Is that what you've heard about the?
That's what I read here on Facebook. I could be wrong.
Well,
enlighten me if you know more.
Let me set the record straight. This was a big, big concern of mine, and the Save Japan Dolphins Group, spearheaded by Rick O'Berry, went to Broome. And what they did in Broome was worked with local people there. There's a man in charge of the, not in charge, he was an elected city official, Chris Maher, and he put forth a bill that recommended the consideration of breaking of ties.
All right.
Only if they continue to kill dolphins. But you have to realize that the issue is not just killing dolphins, it's serving the poison meat in school lunches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's an issue here beyond veganism and and cute dolphins, it has to do with poison meat, mercury and PCBs in these large top level predator animals. We don't eat polar bears because of the toxins in the meat. We don't eat humans, well, for many reasons.
Not yet.
Culture reasons, but if we did, we'd probably make ourselves sick, all of our toxins in our bodies.
Mm.
And the same thing with dolphins. We should not be eating them. They're tested at very high mercury levels in particular. But in Broome, they recommended that severing. Now, I went down to Taiji, and I went into the mayor's office to ask him about this. There was quite a lot of controversy, and big news about it. If anyone looks up Broome, Broome,
mm-hmm.
the city in Western Australia's town, small town in Western Australia, you'll come and dolphin in Google, you'll find all sorts of interesting information. Well, the severing interlude lasted about 3 months, and during that time in Taiji, and I recommend people go to Taiji and go to the city hall and look at the Broome Wall.
All right,
where you have letters from mayors of both towns and the history and all sorts of interesting things that have been gifts from Broome. What happened is the local people there had conflict, the business owners in particular, of Japanese ancestry. And there's a very unusual connection that lasts more than 100 years between the city of Taiji and Broome. And it's there's still relationship connections, family connections, and more importantly, money connections. Well, the locals have used the local Japanese Aussies have used every trick to. Well, first they got the people who were against them voted out of office. There's something powerful. But before they got them voted out of office, they got them to rescind this questioning about Taiji. So just before they were voted out of office, completely losing power,
yeah.
They got they had some power left. They got them to use their power to bring the association back, unfortunately. And now I've heard some really, really bad stories. People signed a petition suggesting that their council rescind this connection. And these people have been told by these business officials, business people, that the moneyed sort there in this little town of Broome, that they don't want them ever in their shops again.
Wow.
But they signed a petition. We're talking high levels you are racist to be against Taiji.
All
it
right.
doesn't matter if they...
So to bring it back to... That's often the case, you know, when people say, boycott Japan and stuff. What I wanted to ask you is very interesting. I know there's a video on YouTube where activists walk around Tokyo showing images and videos from Taiji to the general public. And I don't know, I don't know if
That's Rick, I think. That's Rick O'Berry, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if the editing is proper. But if you believe the editing, then more people than not, have no real notion in Japan either what's going on in Taiji. Or is that a false interpretation of things?
No, certainly. No, that is exactly the case. Yeah, you can, here's what I would like, if your listeners, if there is somebody there who would like to come to Japan and travel around and bring your own camera. It'd be great if you have some higher level skills as well, but just bring your own camera. And what we'll do is we'll work with you, and we'll you go wherever you want, whatever town you want, and we would go with you, assist you, and we would get people to interview. We'd interpret for you, provide you with an interpreter, and ask the questions, any question you want. And you will find 99.9% of everyone you come in contact with has no idea about any people in Japan killing dolphins, consuming dolphins, or selling dolphins.
Wow. It really doesn't surprise me, because, again, if there is an industry and they try to keep it low, and very often I think what people then throw back at us non-nationals is that we should care about our own things. You know, but I'm sure you have Japanese colleagues that are activists just like yourself. Or do they see you as an oddball and say, like, you know, you're a gaijin, you're a foreigner, you know, leave us alone with this.
like you in Ireland?
Yeah, every now and then.
I am so into ending the hunt in Taiji, and yet, and it consumes time and energy and resources, and I always come back at the end, start and end of all my thinking processes and actions. I come down to, okay, now everything that I've thought about and everything I'm planning, how can I bring more Japanese in? And it's been very interesting, the conclusions. First, we have a group in New York of expat Japanese. It's tough when you're in Japan for various reasons. There's someone who stuck their neck out just a little bit and ended up, this was somebody in the celebrity section of Japan, so celebrity tier. And oh my God, they were slapped down. You can't talk about this. It's against the rules. You can't do it. And so to have a Japanese stand up and say, well, maybe we're doing something that's not quite right, is very, very tough. So
yeah, I mean, standing out and showing off is not really encouraged in Japan, is it?
And particularly if it challenges a perceived cultural approach, cultural basis. We can certainly argue that the cultural need to serve poison mercury dolphin to kids. I think that it's time for that culture to change. That doesn't need to exist. But the first group that came up is a group called Choices for Tomorrow in New York City, run by two Japanese.
All right.
Masami and Kozue, fantastic women. They stepped up to interview the director of the Cove, and you can read it's their only Japanese interview. That's an extended, really detailed interview in English and Japanese. I really recommend your audience, listening people here, to go to Choices for Tomorrow, read those interviews. The whole site is English and Japanese. Wonderful people, very approachable, very well connected within New York City. And back in Japan as well. And then after that, I started sending groups down to Taiji, just a few here, and one of those was a Japanese woman.
All right.
In one of those, one of the members is Japanese. Her name is Nao, N-A-O. She's quite wonderful, works in Kyoto as a potter. And then since then, there are some translators stepping forward to say, hey, you need translation done, we got it done for you.
Okay.
You can pay me for it if you want, if you can, please. If not, several of these people, and they don't really want to be mentioned by name because they work elsewhere, but it's growing. And then, of course, there is Sakai Hemmi-san. She has been working on this issue for 30 years. So she has her own network, a group, ELSA, Nature Conservancy. ELSA Nature Conservancy. She's been working on this problem for 30 years.
Wow. That's a lifetime. When you come to think of it, that's really a lifetime, you know, working on something for that long. But let's just go back a step. For the people who haven't got a notion, really, what you're talking about, what exactly is going on in Taiji, and why is it so concerning? Because a lot of people, when you read about it, say, like, you know, we're not talking about the extinction of dolphins here. That's that one part of their defense.
Yes, scientific people will put that argument.
You know, so let's just tell us a bit. You know, what is this all about? What's happening in Taiji?
Okay. Well, first, that whole idea of extinction. We have to go back to the beginning of the Western awareness of dolphin kills in Japan. It started in a place is it Kyushu or Okinawa? Really south, a place called Iki Island.
Mm-hmm.
And a Greenpeace activist named Dexter Cate. Dexter went down, was shocked to find local fishermen slaughtering hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dolphins at a time. Through his attention and negotiations and connections, Hardy Jones has also been working on this problem from that very beginning, and then Sakai Hemi has been working as well from that very, very beginning. Hardy Jones for Blue Voice was the videographer. He is now working really deeply with the mercury issue, considers it the most important issue to end the dolphin kills. I agree. Sakai Hemi is working with translating and interpreting and guiding. And what we have there is the extinction of all dolphins around Iki Island. They're done. They killed all of them. They never come back. And I was talking with the dolphin hunters, about a month ago, before I started taking pictures of them, and they called the police, and that was a different story. By the way, Dexter got arrested for freeing hundreds of dolphins in the middle of the night, the first Westerner to get imprisoned. Bless him. He's since passed away.
All right. And how long was he been in prison for then?
About 90 days, I guess.
All right.
Really long. Very shocking. In the end, he was released, and I don't even think he was charged. I'm sorry. People look him up. Dexter Cate, a hero, one of my heroes. So talking with the dolphin hunters, dolphin killers, however you slant your opinion of them. They, I call them mewkids, mewkids, men, mew, men who kill dolphins.
All right.
Is my nickname for them. Mucids. What they say is that really, the dolphin populations have really, really gone down. Years ago, they used to kill many more dolphins. But I've seen dolphin kills now, just last month, when I was there. And, how many, though? 3 different species. The Risso's dolphins, the Gondo dolphins, and the bottlenose dolphins, they killed them all. They, not that many, is it? Like 20, 28, 35 in that area. It's hard to count when you're looking down on them. But they said they would kill hundreds at a time. And so we really are decreasing. There really is. Maybe they are killing off. I mean, when they bring a pod in, they kill the mothers, whether they're pregnant or not, and they kill the babies. It is disgusting.
Okay.
It is absolutely. I'm sorry, but that's my emotion coming in. But what we do have is they just kill all the family, everybody.
In the back of my head, I still know that it's sometimes difficult anyway for some people to make sense of this if they're just not seeing this as an issue, but. They would probably argue, look, you have these big sushi restaurants and you have different things. What difference does it make if we fish cod or kill dolphins? Because there is a big difference in that, is there?
Sure. We can argue this culturally and we'll be here all night, but if we argue it from a health point of view, a mercury point of view, pretty much the case just closes. Test the animals. The big fish, this kajiki, maguro, swordfish and shark and a dolphin and tilefish are proven scientifically to always, nearly always, contain toxic amounts of mercury. Don't eat these fish. And if for whatever reason we have to put them in a supermarket, well, label it as don't feed it to children or pregnant women.
It doesn't make sense to eat it, to consume it and eat it at all. So even saying don't feed it to your wife, doesn't really quite cut it, isn't it?
Well, for people who are really open-minded, I agree. you know, if I have to say, though, if you know, I would settle for making sure that it doesn't cause the brain damage of a fetus. so let's make sure that doesn't happen. If we got to go slowly, let's start with that and get them. And they'll agree with that. Mm. Okay.
Because that's the thing, you know, going slowly. I mean, when it's not always an option. If you know, pardon my French here, but if the shit hits the fan, you know, and it has done. I mean, you know, just like you said, like there are people working on this for 3 decades.
Yeah.
You know, probably going slow and being nice is not the way to go anymore.
Yeah, I kind of have an in-your-face attitude about things. You know, I go and take pictures and get arrested, if only for an hour.
That's nice, free board and lodge.
No, I wasn't. Well, my person was arrested.
All right, okay.
And I wasn't booked, I wasn't charged.
All right. So they just remove you from the beach.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. At the same time, they said, you have a legal right to be here. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Legal right to be there and take pictures, but we'd rather you not, and we're going to keep you here talking to you until their work is done.
All right. So that's the reason behind it. It must help big time that you've been living in Japan for so long and you speak Japanese. I think it's probably more intimidating to a tourist.